We'll discuss the top political news stories of the week coming up on this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll ask our two guests from different political viewpoints to preview for us the state of Wisconsin. What kind of shape are we in? Governor Walker is going to give his State of the State address next week, but he's proposing some income and property tax cuts already. And it looks like the state is going to have more of a surplus to work with. New revenue figures say Wisconsin will have a nearly $1 billion surplus by mid-2015. What should we do with that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. But we will start this hour with the news announced this morning that State Senator Kathleen Vinehout says she will not run for governor. We'll find out what our two Week in Review guests think about that, and you too. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us Chris Lotto. He is former communication director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
And also with us is Tony Palmieri, professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and a media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right, so State Senator Kathleen Vinehout says she is not going to run for governor. She issued a statement today saying that the severity of the injury that she received in a car accident last month and the time required to recover and rehabilitate make it impossible for me to run the intense grassroots campaign that I want to run and would be necessary to win. She says, I wish success to Mary Burke and others who may offer their time and talents in leading our state. Well, let's start with you, Tony. What's your reaction to that news?
Well, first of all, we all hope that she gets well soon from her accident, but it is unfortunate. It looks like if Senator Vinehout does not run, or the fact that she will not run, means that there probably won't be a primary for the Democrats, and I think that's a bad thing. They need more ideas out there right now. And I think there's a feeling among Democrats and others at the grassroots level that the state Democratic Party kind of anointed Mary Burke. And I think the danger is that it just might frustrate activism, which is what will be needed to remove Governor Walker from office. So when Senator Vinehout said that she supports Burke and others who might run, I'm hoping that there are some others listening out there who throw their hat in the ring.
Yeah, well,
because I think a primary would be a good idea.
Chris, your thoughts on Senator Vinehout withdrawing?
Sure. First, a get well soon to Senator Vinehout. Hope she recovers quickly. It sounds like it was a pretty serious accident. But that said, Mary Burke is, she staked her claim as the candidate to beat. She obviously has the money because she can self-finance, and that's going to scare off a lot of people right out of the gate. She's presumably way out front in terms of having an organization together. A statewide election is not easy to just pull together. And, there's not a lot of time left. So she is the front runner. I think she is very beatable. So that is good news for Republicans, actually. I think that Governor Walker is going to have a record of experience and a record of getting things done for this state that is going to be tough to beat. And I think that even though she does have, deep pockets, that I think she's a very beatable candidate. And to the point made earlier, that kind of money will scare off other people. You're not probably going to see a lot of challenges. You may see some sort of fringe candidates emerge, and there may be somebody else who emerges with deep pockets, but it's going to turn into a war of dollars, and nobody really wants that. So it looks like, at this point, unless some names surface fairly quickly, that that she will be the leading candidate in November.
Well, Tony, why would progressives not want Mary Burke to defeat Governor Walker?
I think it's a case of progressives not wanting Mary Burke. I think she's got the potential to be a great candidate. But as we know, when candidates are Madison-based and multimillionaires, there tends to be at least perception initially that they're not in line with the grassroots, the workers of the state. So Mary Burke has an educational effort to serve surmount here. I mean, she's got to show people that, in fact, she is in touch with the working people of the state. Because the point is that Governor Scott Walker can be beaten, but he'll only be beaten if there's excitement and activism at the street level. I think a good competitive primary would help energize people at the street level. Absent that kind of energy, neither Mary Burke or anyone else will defeat the governor.
Yeah. There is something to be said for a strong primary, and that obviously goes for both political parties, the idea that you're getting people talking, you're getting people passionate and interested earlier. Now it's kind of looks like the fix is in almost. You have this one candidate, and things get awfully slow, awfully quick. Mary Burke is already taking aim at Governor Walker and is going to continue to do that. Governor Walker can continue to just sort of, you know, brush her off for the months ahead, and you know, he's got a job to do as governor. So a primary can be a very energizing experience for a political party, and at least at this moment, it doesn't look like the Democrats are going to have that.
Yeah. So, Tony, do you think there's any other Democrat out there that could defeat Mary Burke, number one, but that would provide that kind of excitement for the...
I think there are any number of candidates that could defeat Governor Walker. I think that there's large-scale dissatisfaction with his policies. I mean, I know when he prevailed in the recall election, there were many, many voters out there who said that they voted to keep him in office only because they thought that the issues didn't warrant recall, but that they would not support him in a general election. I mean, I think the opportunity is there. The key, again, is to get people fired up at the grassroots level. I'm thinking that perhaps Mary Burke can be the candidate who does that. She is traveling the state. She's talking to people. In small communities and large communities, I mean, perhaps she can do it. I just think that a competitive primary would ultimately make her a stronger candidate. And if it was a very effective person who went through the primary, he or she could develop that energy to defeat the governor. So, you know, we still have a long way until Election Day. Much can happen until then. But I just hope that when Senator Vinehout said that she supports Mary Burke or others, that I hope there are others listening out there who are thinking of throwing their hat in the ring.
Let's take a call from Cody in Oshkosh. Hi, Cody.
Hi there. I'm glad that Vinehout is out right now. I've been a supporter of hers, but I think the progressives have to get behind Mary Burke at this point. It's all in to beat Walker. And Mary might have deep pockets, but Walker's in somebody's deep pocket, the Koch brothers, so the money issue is pretty much going to still be one-sided. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Cody. Tony, I guess we'll have you react to that first.
Well, I think Cody makes a great point. I mean, you've got the Lieutenant Governor, Clayfish, in a room with a group of the 1% saying, we want to find out how we can love you more. So, I mean, I think we know where this administration is coming from. I mean, I just disagree with Cody that everyone needs to just kind of get behind Mary right now. I mean, she needs to demonstrate that she's worthy of supporting. I mean, we need to see more positions from her on everything. I mean, where does she stand on raising the minimum wage, for example? Where does she stand on the Act 10 and what we should do to reform that and so on. So when she starts taking clearer positions, and if they are in line with some of Wisconsin's progressive tradition, I think we'll start to see more support coalesce behind her. I do think that a competitive primary would energize ultimately her campaign.
Yeah. And your final thoughts on this, Chris?
Yeah, there's something to be said for. I don't know that she has run for office before. I don't believe she has.
School board.
School. Okay. Well, you know, statewide office is obviously a whole mm-hmm. different animal, and there's something to be said for a candidate who is battle tested in a primary, and since she's a first timer at a race of this size. That frankly puts her at a disadvantage, as it would most candidates who you know, have not been under fire by others in a primary. So again, we'll see if anybody materializes. You know, Republicans and the Walker campaign are certainly going to hang the specter of the Doyle administration around her neck, and that is a buzzword that fires up a lot of Republicans. So I don't think there's going to be any shortage of energy on the side of the GOP this year in this race.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Chris Lotto and Tony Palmieri during this edition of Our Week in Review. If there's an issue in the news this week that you would like us to discuss, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, Governor Walker will deliver the State of the State address next week. We'll be carrying that live on the Ideas Network. I believe it's Wednesday night. And I'm wondering first... I'm going to just kind of throw you guys this. Usually the governor says the state of the state is blank. Let me have you describe the state of the state before we get into some of the issues. Chris Lotto, what is the state of the state of Wisconsin?
Well, Governor Walker is going to say the state of the state is strong. He's been at the helm for a few years. He's been, it's fair to say, embattled. With the attempted recall that he survived, and the knives are going to be out for him this year. He is going to have to prove to the people of Wisconsin this year that he did what he said he was going to do, certainly on the issue of taxes, and I think we'll be covering that a little later on. There are going to be some new tax proposals out there to give relief to the people of Wisconsin, and that's a good thing. Certainly one of the things that's going to be out there as an issue is going to be jobs and whether we've recovered at a rate that's going to satisfy people in Wisconsin. He will have to answer to that next week and this year, but I think that you could say that Governor Walker is... Currently, has Wisconsin in a better place than it was when he took office, and that state government is in a better position than it was when he was first elected. So I think things are looking up for the administration.
The state of the state is what, Tony?
Well, the governor will say it's strong, but I think that the average Wisconsinite does not believe that. The governor has not come even close to his promise on jobs. We know that they're looking for ways to find out how they can love the richest people in the state even more while not showing much love for the working people of the state. A report came out just the other day from the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, a nonpartisan group, that racial disparities in Wisconsin, as we approach Martin Luther King Day, this is a good issue to think about. We are one of the worst states in the nation in terms of the status of African Americans compared to the white population in the state in terms of unemployment, incarceration, and other critical issues. That obviously did not start with Governor Walker, but his administration certainly is not addressing those types of issues. So we've got a long way to go. Now we've got the governor's supporters in the legislature now talking about the seven-day work week and things of that nature. So I think that the state of the state right now for many, many people is demoralized and feeling that the government is not really on their side, and that's unfortunate.
We'll get into more of the proposals that Governor Walker has already put out there, proposing some income tax cuts, property tax cuts. The state is looking at this surplus of nearly $1 billion by mid-2015. We'll talk a little bit more about that and the proposal for the seven-day work week as we go along during this edition of The Week in Review. Speaking of Martin Luther King Day, we will also be carrying, as we have for the past few decades, on Monday at noon, we will celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in words and music. It's Wisconsin's 34th annual tribute and ceremony at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison. Your host is Wisconsin Public Radio's Jonathan Overby, and the celebration this year is themed We Shall Not Be Moved. That's the 34th annual tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. live from the state capitol, Monday starting at noon here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Tony Palmieri. He's a professor of communications at UW Oshkosh, and Chris Lotto, former communication director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with two guests from different political perspectives about the top political news of the week. Today we're talking to Chris Lotto and Tony Palmieri. And you, if you have a topic that you would like to bring up, something from the news this week, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Here's a question you can weigh in on. What should the state do with this nearly $1 billion surplus we're supposedly going to have? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, let's, Chris Lotto, how come the state's going to have $1 billion in surplus by the mid-2015?
It's, an increase in the amount of tax collections beyond what has been projected, basically. And it's a sign of really economic health of the state more than anything. But, you know, a lot of times, in Wisconsin, budgets are kind of built on projections and, you know, where they think they're going to be versus where they end up being. And at this point, the state is looking to run a deficit of nearly $1 billion, as you mentioned. And I think the question now becomes, well, what do we do with the surplus? Republicans, the governor, assembly leaders led by Robin Voss and in the Senate, Senator Fitzgerald, are all going to be talking about what they want to do with it. I think they're looking at a combination of property tax cuts and how to distribute that, whether it's through the technical colleges and the counties, and then also having income tax cuts as well. It's certainly good news for the people of Wisconsin to have more talk about tax cuts and suggest that the relative health economically of Wisconsin is improving. So it is certainly a good sign. There's also discussion about how much we set aside for making sure the next budget's balanced. And I know that some in the Senate are very concerned about that. So everybody's going to have their proposals here in the coming days. And the news is good, but now the wrangling begins over what we do with it.
Tony, what do you make of this projected surplus?
Well, I disagree with Chris that it's a sign of strengthening of the Wisconsin economy. I think that state economies suffer when the national economy suffers, and we certainly saw that from 2008 to 2012. But as we start to see recovery nationally, we start to see it in the states. I mean, and that's why, you know, Minnesota, our neighbor, has had their billion-dollar projection of a surplus. I think that budgets being as volatile as they are, and given the fact that the next budget starts with a $725 million deficit, it's probably a good idea to put as much of that surplus as possible into the rainy day fund. If they don't do that, I believe some of it has to go in there by law, but if all of it doesn't go into a rainy day fund, if it were me making the decision, I would say restore some money to the state shared revenue program, because that program, which has been really hit hard over the last 10 to 15 years, that's a key state program that actually reduces property taxes at the local level, because the more state aid that cities get, the more they can reduce the burden on the local property tax payer. But unfortunately, I'm not hearing anyone talking about rescuing that shared revenue program. It keeps getting hit even harder with each budget.
Yeah, so how do we lower property taxes without increasing state or shared revenue, Chris?
That's a wonderful question.
isn't the governor talking about pulling the technical colleges off our property tax bill?
I believe that was a topic of discussion, and one of the things that is being discussed right now is using the technical colleges as a method for distributing property tax relief. I think to the professor's point earlier, both parties, and I've said this on this show before, are guilty of using accounting tricks and have been doing it for decades, and this is Republicans and Democrats. The way we run budgets in this state is not ideal, and there's a lot of let's say, trickery going on with spending being moved around and when the bills come due, that, you know, it would be nice to see, you know, a government that is willing to take that on. I think it was the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance this week that, that pointed to this and said that, you know, this is something that needs to be addressed, that there is always a sort of structural deficit, a rolling deficit that, that grows or shrinks, but it's always there. And the question is, when does somebody, you know, develop the intestinal fortitude to deal with it? You know, that said, the Republican Party and the legislature and the governor view this as, you know, and I think ultimately rightly, that this really is the people's money and they deserve to see some form of relief. And certainly, you know, to again, to the professor's point, the economy is recovering, but not recovering perhaps at a pace that we'd all like to see. So tax relief will help stimulate the economy. It will help put more money in people's pockets, get them spending, and it will lead to job and business development. So it is good news for Wisconsin.
David, on
Facebook.
Go ahead, Tony.
I'm sorry, Joy. I think what complicates matters this year is that you have a governor, Governor Walker, that not only wants to get reelected, but probably has national ambitions. So it is in his personal political interest to run for office as the tax-cutting champion. And I think that's going to result in proposals that are probably not going to be healthy for the state, and may ultimately leave us with longer-term fiscal problems. I mean, I think Tommy Thompson made the same mistake years ago. You probably, I'm sure you both remember that. I think it was 99 or 2000, maybe 98 or 99, when we had a surplus, and Tommy decided to send every taxpayer a check. We then went into deep, deep structural deficit. I think it was over $2 billion by the time we got to Scott McCallum. So I think it's unfortunate when politics gets into the mix. You'd like to think that our representatives and our governor could sit down and try to figure out rationally how to use this money so that we don't have the long-term financial problems that we have had in the past.
I remember getting my check for $40 from Governor Dreyfus, I believe. Wasn't it?
I don't remember that, but I do remember. I remember a $300 check,
there might have been a bigger one.
You know,
later,
every once in a while, yeah.
Well, here's a comment from David on Facebook. He says, "How about go back to funding our society instead of pretending we're always bankrupt, cutting everything, and then passing a tax cut for the wealthy?" Tony.
Yeah, I mean, I think he makes a good point, and nationally we're seeing this. I mean, Bill de Blasio's election of mayor in New York City as a, you know, flaming progressive, talking about ending wealth inequality and blatantly talking about higher taxes on the rich to support preschool education in New York. I mean, and the minimum wage drives across the nation. I mean, I think we're seeing more and more people stepping forward and saying it's about time we start serving the people at large instead of always serving the very richest among us and the kind of trickle-down economics, which over and over again has been shown not to work. So, I mean, I think David is right on target.
Yeah, what do you think, Chris?
Well, look, I mean, to the listener's point, it really boils down to a fundamental difference in perception and a difference in priorities, and this is all built on the premise that the government is taking your money and how are they spending it. Republicans believe that you should be able to keep more of your money, and it's built on that principle. Obviously, Mary Burke and Democrats in Wisconsin will likely disagree. They know this is coming, so if they want to stand out there and say we ought to do this, that, or the other thing with it, they can do that, and the people of Wisconsin come November will be able to make that choice. But Republicans are taking a principal stand. They're saying that the government and is in better shape. Tax collections are more than we previously expected. And we can give the people of Wisconsin across the state and every county of the state some relief.
We have lots of people weighing in on Facebook with things that they would like to see that surplus used for or not used for. Ann in Watertown emails, "I would like to see the surplus money used for interest-free loans for UW college students." Adam on Facebook says, "Interregional public transit." Lisa on Facebook says, "Restore money to public schools." John says, "Check, please." What's going to happen, Chris? What do you expect? Just kind of wrapping this up. What are we going to hear from the governor? What's going to happen?
Yeah,
with this money?
We'll hear from him next week. And as we kind of led off, I mean, it's pretty clear that a tax cut's coming. The question is going to be how much, and there's going to be, you know, even among Republicans, there are different priorities. So you know, how much of it is income? How much of it is property? Certainly, there is I believe a state mandate, to the professor's point earlier, to put some of that money in a rainy day fund. That's obviously going to have to happen. How much of it is put forward to making sure that the next budget is you know, in shape and ready and funded? I think those are the priorities that are going to be discussed in the coming weeks. But I don't think there's much question that we're going to see a tax cut as part of this. It's just a question of what form it takes.
Mm-hmm. Tony, your thoughts?
Well, I think what's interesting is that almost all of the suggestions that you're getting, Joy, on Facebook and email really are great suggestions for building the economy of this state. Helping people pay to go to school, especially technical and university, transit. I mean, these are all economic development tools. So I hope that whatever the governor and legislature do actually is based on some kind of grounded, you know, grounded studies, let's say, that what they will do will stimulate our economy. Our fear is that they'll simply have some kind of mindless tax cut proposal that'll once again benefit the very wealthy as opposed to everyone else, and not stimulate the economy, but allow the governor to show the love, if you will, to the richest contributors to the campaign.
Let's talk a little bit about this 7-day work week bill that Tony mentioned a little bit earlier. Wisconsin manufacturing and retail workers could volunteer to work 7 days straight without a day off under this bill that two Republican lawmakers are circulating on behalf of Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce. Current law says that there needs to be a 24-hour day of rest, and you're not supposed to work 7 days straight. Tony, why is this a bad thing?
I think the Racine Journal-Times had a great editorial on this earlier in the week that you'll get. Well, they made a couple of points. Number one, it's clear that the legislators coming forward with this really did not talk to any workers or even many business owners. They spoke to Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce. I mean, that's where they got the idea from. And the Journal Times was also concerned that workers can be intimidated and feel if they don't work the 7 days, they may not get the promotion, they may even get fired. And they also made the point in that editorial that under current Wisconsin law, you actually can work 12 days in a row if you take your day off at the beginning of that period and at the end of that period. So the current law is fine, and I think this is just one more sign of certain elements of the Republican Party just doing whatever they can to support the big business interests in the state at the expense of everyone else. What workers in this state really want is a pay increase. They don't want to work more days. They'd like to actually make more money, and unfortunately our governor and the legislative majority does not support any minimum wage increase, and I don't see any strategy coming out of the Republican majority and the governor to actually increase wages in this state or even a sound jobs creation bill. But that's really what people want, jobs and higher wages. They don't want to work more days.
Chris Lotto, what about the 7-day work week?
Yeah, back on the point of the 7-day work week, I think, you know, look, on the face of it, it's an acceptable idea. It would bring Wisconsin in line with federal law, makes this decision a choice for those who want to work a little harder and earn the extra money, and why shouldn't they be able to do that? But, you know, I will admit, thinking about it a little more, you know, do we have to worry about some employers taking advantage of this and subtly forcing people to maybe work more days? Could this contribute ultimately to fewer jobs and maybe even people getting laid off? I mean, if you have people willing to work a bunch of extra shifts, suddenly those who don't want to or can't for whatever reason, you know, are they in danger of being pushed out because they're not needed anymore? So, you know, I understand the other side of this issue, and I can see the concern. I think right now I'm coming down on the side of, you know, let the people work the extra hours if they want to do that. They should be able to. But certainly there could be unintended consequences here, and I think the bill should get a thorough hearing to consider the full potential impact on all sides.
Let's talk about another bill that was getting some attention this week. Was a bill that was authored by Representative Joel Clayfish that would change the child support formula that would have aided one of his constituents, a wealthy constituent who was paying a lot in child support. It would have lowered his child support payments. Representative Clayfish has withdrawn this bill, saying it was being misinterpreted or, you know, why do you laugh, Tony?
It's just outrageous that he would say it's being misinterpreted. I mean, the fact is it was being interpreted very correctly. His staff was working hand in hand with a very wealthy contributor to his campaign who was looking for a way to reduce his own child support payments, and he got caught. You know, I tell you, thank goodness we have the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and other groups that monitor campaign finance in the state that really allow for some transparency so that we can see the impact of money and special influence in this legislature. So for Representative Clayfish, no, we didn't misinterpret. We interpreted it very accurately, and I think he saw that going forward with this, when after seeing the connection here, was not going to be good for him politically, and certainly it was looking like outrageous legislation.
What do you think of this whole flap, Chris?
Yeah, well, I take Representative Clayfish at his word that nothing was promised to Michael Izenga. Let's set that aside. In politics, perception is oftentimes everything, and this looked awful. So it was the smart thing to do to pull the bill. It's not going to go anywhere now anyway because it's mired in this controversy, so you're not going to see anything happening. And unfortunately, this whole matter kind of taints the larger discussion of the child support system, and there may have been some merit to having that discussion. That's not going to happen now. I think a part of the bill called for judges to equalize placement between parents unless there's clear and convincing evidence that it's not in the child's best interest. There are other issues at play here that maybe merited some discussion that are not going to happen. I mean, divorce is an ugly process. Battling over custody, battling over money, battling over child support is an ugly process, and oftentimes very personal. It's very dependent on individual circumstances. So, you know, working out what's fair and just, you know, is something that often has to happen on a case-by-case basis with the guidance of law. So, you know, maybe all this gets a review at some point. Obviously, right now with this controversy, it's not the right time.
Well, this bill would have exempted income above $150,000 from child support. It would have reduced this particular donor's payments from the current level of $15,000 per month. What about the exempting income above $150,000, Tony? Is there anything? Is there any merit to that?
You know, Joy, I don't know what the median income in this state is, but it's significantly less than $150,000. The majority of people in this state are not going to feel sorry for this millionaire and his child support payments. I mean, this entire issue is just one more symptom of what's going on in Madison, where you've got special interest lobbyists, very well-connected, who get their way on state legislation at the expense of everyone else. I mean, this was one of my and many other people's critiques of so much going on in Act 10 and other parts of legislation. You know, you've got the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, that has what seems to be undue influence in writing state laws. You've got legislators in Madison that seem all too willing to let some of these very well-connected characters write the bills. No public hearings. So I think it's, Joy, it's really less about this particular bill on divorce and more about the way legislation is made right now in Madison, and it's really not pretty, and I think we really do need reform.
Chris?
Well, I know for Democrats all roads lead to Act 10 and the Koch brothers, but sorry, Professor. I think that again, you know, reiterating an earlier point, some of these cases are so personal and have to be worked out among parties who, frankly, don't like each other very much. So you could take a look at this and say, well, this is just one individual who's bitter at his ex-wife and doesn't want to give her a lot of money, and it you know, breaks his pocketbook every time he has to write a $15,000 check. You know, we don't know what the circumstances are exactly in that relationship. Obviously, by his and his team's involvement in this legislation, it has now become more public than perhaps he, you know, thought or hoped that it would be. You know, I can't argue the merits of that case. I think that it's an issue that deserves to be aired, but it's not going to be aired in this atmosphere where everybody's upset over, you know, how this went down with Representative Clayfish.
Chris Lotto is a former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. And Tony Palmieri is a professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. They are our two guests for this edition of The Week in Review. Coming up, we will move on to some other issues, including a voucher school that closed down suddenly. Talk a little bit about Common Core bills that are before the legislature, and much more as our Week in Review continues here on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. It's time now for The Week in Review quiz. Nominations for the 86th Academy Awards were unveiled yesterday. Nine films are up for Best Picture, including one that was written by Mequon native John Ridley. So our Week in Review question, which screenplay, which Academy Award-nominated screenplay did Mequon native John Ridley write? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. That's our number if you would like to guess. You can also email your guess to talk@wpr.org. We will give you about 5 minutes or so to play along with our Week in Review quiz. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the winner and the answer at the end of the program. And by the way, we have new cool WPR swag as our Week in Review giftie, so I think we have a nice pen or something that we'll send you if you're the winner of today's Week in Review quiz. All right, well, let's get back to some issues in the news this week. Let's talk about this Milwaukee voucher school, Life Skills Academy, closing in the dead of night. And apparently, that particular Milwaukee Parental School Choice Program school had already collected more than $200,000 from taxpayers for the academic year. Now it's closed, and I believe the owners are in Florida somewhere. Chris Lotto, what do we do about that?
Well, first of all, it's an infuriating story, and you know that these people are cheats, and they're not just cheating taxpayers, but more importantly, they're cheating the students and their families by suddenly just pulling up stakes and leaving. You know, we've heard stories and seen them in the news about just how shoddy this operation apparently was. It was obviously not serving you know, kids well. One would hope that those responsible are going to be tracked down and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. There are flaws in the system that need to be addressed, and the state legislature needs to be looking at that. I saw something about a forthcoming bill that would propose, you know, more limits on who can open a voucher school, and we obviously need to look at that in Wisconsin. You know, the problem with life skills and bad programs like this is that it does give the voucher program a bad name, and overall the voucher program is a laudable program, and there are a lot of success stories out there, but it all takes is one life skills to kind of sully the reputation of voucher schools, and that's unfortunate.
We need stronger accountability for voucher schools?
I think, first of all, we need to know up front who's running these things, and I think that's what my understanding is, that there's some legislation kicking around or maybe proposed that is taking a closer look at who's proposing them, and I understand that those responsible for running life skills, you know, there were some issues that should have raised red flags for the state a long time ago.
Tony, your thoughts on this Life Skills Academy closing down?
Well, it's important to point out that I believe only one student in that program was proficient in reading or math, which completely knocks down the argument that these voucher schools produce better education. I mean, the let's face it, the $2 million that went to this school over a few years is $2 million that did not go into the public school system in our state. And whenever mostly Republicans talk about expanding this voucher program statewide, this should be the story that starts off that discussion. I mean, how would we keep these schools accountable? I mean, this in the case of this life skills program, I mean, this is so blatant. I think everyone agrees that this is a problem. But there have been many, many studies done that show that the voucher schools do not educate better than the public schools do. So it really is time to look at this issue in the big picture and have the discussion whether we need the voucher schools to begin with. Maybe we do need to start supporting our public schools more strongly than we currently do.
Chris. Well, with all due respect, Professor, I think we can all agree, Republican or Democrat, that Life Skills was not serving its students well. That is disastrously a bad record of serving kids. That said, to hold up Life Skills as an example that the entire system has to be dismantled is frankly just not the way to go about it. I think everybody would admit they were not serving the kids well. They had a terrible track record. And they are you know, a bad apple, and that's putting it mildly. But that does not mean you get rid of the whole voucher program.
Yeah, but if voucher schools are not, if kids are not becoming more proficient in reading or math or other things, should there be stronger accountability to?
Sure, I just like a public school would need to be held more accountable. Absolutely, anytime an educational system that's set up and is funded with taxpayer money is not serving its students well, you need to deal with that. Absolutely, and that goes for voucher and that goes for public schools too.
Well, let's talk a little bit, since it's another education issue that was in the news this week. An assembly committee considered Common Core bills, and Common Core standards covering math and English were adopted in 2010 in Wisconsin by State Superintendent Tony Evers, but there is some who say that Wisconsin needs its own Common Core standards, or it should drop the Common Core standards. What do you think, Chris? What's this all about?
Well, Common Core really gets conservatives and Tea Party types all sorts of wound up, and I've seen this at meetings. I know that they're not happy with it. They want the standards to go away. That is unlikely to happen. I don't know that there's any serious proposal in the legislature or any movement to do away with Common Core. The question is whether this, there's a proposal out there to kind of review and revise academic standards every 6 years, and that was something that was being discussed in legislative hearings this week. You know, whether that's a common sense solution that creates more transparency, and is more responsive. Do we think that Wisconsin and local school boards know what works best for our students, or do we want the federal government to pass down standards? And I think that's part of the debate. The other underlying issue here is that Superintendent Tony Evers, apparently approved Common Core without really getting much public and legislative input. And I know that leaves Republicans feeling burned. They think that there should have been more involvement before those were just passed. So the recommendations being discussed now, are calling for that more transparent and timely review of model academic standards. And I think DPI can play obstructionist here, or I think that the smarter choice, it would behoove them to start the conversation now with legislators, and listen a little bit and try and figure out a way to come together on this one, because I do think there's some common ground.
Mm-hmm. Tony.
I think if we are going to have a Common Core, there needs to be more public oversight of it and more review of it. But let me tell you, as a college teacher who works with lots of freshmen and sophomore students, what I have found over the years in my teaching career, that the students who come to the university out of the K-12 system, what I'll call the best students, seem to be those who had really inspiring teachers in their K-12 years and also had very supportive family network. I mean, so what that would suggest to me is that if we really want to have a strong school system and well-educated people, we've got to make sure that we're training teachers as best as we possibly can and that we are supporting families out there. I don't think having people working 7 days a week is a family value that will help people educate their kids in the home. So Yeah, I think the Common Core is a nice way for politicians to make it look like they're actually doing something for education. But I think that educational professionals will tell you that it really goes way beyond a Common Core to educate people.
Let's we should talk about a few more issues before we run out of time. While I mentioned that we are focusing more on Wisconsin issues during our Week in Review program, because On Point will be spending a lot of time on a lot of national issues, we will certainly still talk about some top national issues during this program, including President Obama is going to announce changes to the NSA surveillance program in a speech this morning at around 10 o'clock, and we know that he's probably going to call for the end of the NSA's ability to store phone data from millions of Americans, as well as ask Congress, the Justice Department, and the intelligence community to help decide who should hold these records. Well, Tony, what do you make of President Obama's NSA reforms as we know them so far?
He's not going to go far enough in his recommendations. What I think he needs to do, and he won't do this, unfortunately, is come out and simply say that since 9/11, the Bush administration and his administration have overreached and made a mistake. And that, as the president's own advisory group has shown him, that really no terrorist acts have been prevented because of this program. And he won't do this also in this speech, but I think it's time for him to advocate for leniency toward Edward Snowden. I mean, this young man put his life and career at risk to expose some of these abuses. And he's, you know, living in exile in Russia. I think were it not for this one person, we would not be having this this discussion. And even the New York Times has come out and said there should be leniency for Snowden. So I mean, I think the president should come out and acknowledge that there's been tremendous overreach, that there's been a mistake, and that we should start really acknowledging the persons, in this case Mr. Snowden, who are allowing this discussion to take place, pledge leniency toward them, and really rein in this program. One other thing is he might call for the presence of a public advocate in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. I mean, we certainly need that, because apparently the court has just been a rubber stamp for the government over the years.
Let me, Chris, your thoughts on the NSA reforms.
Well, yeah, every indication are the president's going to punt, and that shouldn't be necessarily surprising. Candidate Obama said one thing. President Obama has done something starkly different. And so those words, you know, that he said back in 2007 about no more illegal wiretapping of American citizens, et cetera, is coming back to haunt him now. But, you know, clearly as president, he has realized there is a need to do this stuff. And now he's going to have to kind of thread that needle of publicly saying, you know, we have problems here, and yet knowing that we need something like this to continue to protect American citizens.
Congratulations to Chuck and Nina. He is the winner of our Week in Review quiz. We asked, which movie did Mequon screenwriter John Ridley make? That's up for Best Picture at this year's Oscars. And the movie is 12 Years a Slave. So congratulations to Chuck and Nina. I did not see that movie. I saw about three of the Oscar-nominated movies. I'll have to see 12 Years a Slave. Chris Lotto, do you have a favorite movie from this year?
I love movies. I've seen all the Best Picture nominees except Nebraska. I saw Her yesterday. It was very good. But I think the best one of the group is Wolf of Wall Street. I loved it. But, you know, congrats to John Ridley. I think he was nominated for an Oscar for screenplay as well.
Right. That's it. Yeah. So, Tony, what about you? Did you, do you have a favorite Oscar-nominated movie?
I did see 12 Years a Slave. I thought it was a great film. I didn't see the others, so
there we go.
Confident to judge.
Thanks very much, Tony, Chris, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony Palmieri, Professor of Communications, UW-Oshkosh. Chris Lotto, former Communications Director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Thanks to Christy Taylor for production and direction. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.